On ABC Radio,
this is The Big Fish
with Scott Levi.
Good morning, welcome aboard another episode of The Big Fish and Steve Morgan's crabby brim techniques coming up. Also joining us, Craig Butcher, Butcher's best burley and baits for inshore Sydney snapper. Stinker's back on the evolution of the tackle shop, and our walking tour of Sydney Harbour continues with the wonderful Alex Bellissimo as we look at shore-based options around the harbour, this time around Fairlight Beach, all coming up on The Big Fish. Last week on The Big Fish, Steve Morgan was talking about some of the great tactics and techniques for catching wily brim, the yellowfin brim of Queensland and New South Wales, the black brim of southern New South Wales and Victoria and further around, and I think they're black brim in Western Australia too, in the Swan. Good morning, Steve.
Yeah, morning. I love my brim fishing, and it's been no secret I've been doing it since I was about 10. So that was 37 years ago I started catching brim on lures, and I still love it today.
This luring of brim, and there's always a new lure, and they do get wise to it, but at the moment the hit is the realistic crab lures. Got no idea how to fish them. What are some of the tactics and techniques for fooling a brim with these incredible little works of art?
Well, I'll give you a little bit of the history of the lure. It was invented by a guy called Steve Steer in Tasmania, the most popular crab imitation in Australia. And he always used to fish tournaments and then look in his live well at the end of the session and look at all of the crab legs and crab claws and busted up bits of crab shell in his live well. And he said, you know what? None of these other lures we fish, they imitate fish, they imitate shrimps, they imitate basically everything except a crab. So he put his mind to it and he invented this little crab. And what it does, it's a heavy lure, so it sinks down and it sits on the bottom, but it's got these two claws, and the claws are actually cut out of foam to look like claws. And each of them has a number 12 or a number 14 treble embedded in it. So this little crab sits on the bottom with his claws floating around, and any minor movement of the water makes these crabs sort of wave, the claws wave around like they're lifelike. Now, of course, you think about the brim who's cruising on the bottom and he sees a crab there. The first thing a brim does is it tries to pluck the claws off the crab so it doesn't bite it as it's eating it. So, of course, the brim swims along, sees the crab on the bottom, plucks the claw, and what happens? He gets a number 12 or 14 treble stuck in his mouth. And that's as easy as it is. So when you're fishing a crab, you fish in an area where you know there's a brim. So it might be beside a bridge pylon, a navigation marker, a rock bar. It might be in a marina where you know there's heaps of brim.
Do they work on the sand flats too?
They do work on the sand flats as well, but they work really well when you know you're putting it next to a brim. So you can pitch it into the water, let it sink on a slack line. So it's not like a normal lure where you throw it out and wind it in. They have no action apart from the fact that they sink really sort of naturally like a crab. It'll sit on the bottom, its little claws will wave around, and you just sit there, you take the slack out of the line, and you just feel that lure. And normally, you can feel that lure, and then you'll feel a little tap on the line, and that tap is the brim trying to pluck off the crab claws. As soon as you feel a tap, you just start winding slowly, and the rod will load up, and the brim is on. It's literally halfway between bait and lure fishing. You can throw the crab out a long way, and you can drag it across the sand flats, or you can cover ground with it. But there are other better lures that can do that a little bit quicker. But in these spots, particularly bridge pylons, every bridge in Australia has got 100 brim living around it that are absolute suckers for a crab lure. So when you know the fish are there, it's nearly unfair how well they work.
I love the sound of that. There have been lures and flies banned over history that they've been too effective. I think oftentimes it's the imagination of fishermen who aren't catching them. But this sounds too good to be true. But you have, and many other tournament fishers, have bagged out on these things, haven't you?
Oh, look, they go in cycles. Like, we've been running ABT brim tournaments now for 20 years. So over the years, we've seen the lures come in. Like, we were here when Berkeley Gulp first came in. It was a biodegradable, like a bio bait. It was sort of man-made. It wasn't, you know... If you bought a Berkeley Gulp worm, it wasn't a worm. It was an artificial worm, but it sort of smelled good and it for a fish. And when they came out, fish went crazy over them. But over the years, they've got smarter and smarter. So you go and fish a Berkeley Gulp now, and it's probably just as effective as any other lure in the box. Those crabs have been around for 4 or 5 years now. But normally by now, the effectiveness would have slowed up a bit. Because they're so realistic, though, I think we're going to probably get another 5 or 10 years out of them. So
yeah.
They go in cycles. So the the gulp that is not effective now, in 10 years' time when no one uses it, someone will put it back on again and it'll be awesome again.
That's a very good point. It's the Big Fish. We're speaking with Steve Morgan with techniques for crab lures. Bushy has the same theory. So, he thinks like a fish, saying in his southern estuaries and lakes full of big wily black brim that live for well over 20 years, don't they? They were absolutely suckers for the small vibes, the small metal vibes. You'd see a big school of them on the sound, and drop it down in 10, 15 feet of water, bang, 10 fish in a row, every fish in the school. Now, as soon as you give that vibe a little bit of a brrrt through the water, they scatter.
That's it.
They're
and
wise
those,
to it.
And until those fish have forgotten about that, then it's going to be hard work. So that's why it's always good. It's good for the fishing industry, really, because you sort of always need the thing that the fish hasn't seen yet. And it's, it's why fishing is the most accessorized sport in the whole world, isn't it? You need to have the latest and greatest, otherwise you're going to fail.
And you reckon they still haven't wised up to the crab in some of these areas where they're fished for with artificials?
Well, I reckon I can look at it statistically. When that cranker crab came out, the average bag weight in my tournaments went up by about half a kilo. So that's probably 100 grams extra. And that's just, that shows that they're actually just catching more fish. So if you used to go out in a tournament and catch five fish, you had to bring in the five that you caught, you brought in. If you go out nowadays and catch 10 fish, you get to pick the biggest five because you keep them alive in your live well, throw the little one out, put the big one in. So on average, across the whole field, it's worth 500 grams extra per person, I reckon. And that's crazy statistics for just one sort of lure.
It is amazing, isn't it, when you think about the whole number of fishes and all the rest of it. And, Steve, what about losing them? Because you're fishing on the bottom, but they're very expensive.
Yep.
And, what about techniques to not lose them down there and amongst the cockle beds or the barnacle-encrusted pylons of the wharf?
Yeah, well, there's a couple of ways. And the first is the two ways you lose a lure is, one, it snags on something and you can't get it back. That's something we can control. The other way you lose them is if you throw them into such a nasty place, a fish grabs it and it breaks your line or it rubs against the barnacle and you lose it that way. So we sort of don't worry about option two, because if you're hooking a big fish and losing it due to your own lack of skill winding it in, well, we can sort of live with that. But you can really control those ones that are all up to you, which is getting it snagged. So I find one really good way to do it is a lot of the time fish the lure vertically. So I'll go up to some bridge pylons and I'll only pitch the lure out 3 or 4 metres and my line will be nearly straight up and down above that lure. So I might be in 3 or 4 metres of water and I'm fishing straight up and down. Very difficult to snag your lure, especially that cranker crab, when you're that close to it and when you're straight above it. But if you do snag it, the best thing to do is, especially if you're in a boat, you can take your boat up to the other side of where it, so if you're bringing the lure towards you, you sort of go around to the other side of where you got it snagged and you pull it back the other way. And I reckon 9 out of 10 times that lure will come back out, because those little claws float and it's never the claws that are stuck on the snag. It's always just the body is sort of wedged in there. So if you get a good sharp tug the other way, it'll come out. You haven't thrown your $20 away and you can keep fishing that lure.
Yeah, and probably don't embed it too much. Don't pull too hard from one way and go and take it from the opposite direction, you're saying,
and it'll
come off. Yeah, they're only tiny hooks, and they're floating hooks too, so they actually should be up above a little bit above the weed or the snag. And what about incidental catch, Steve? Are there any other fish that go them? Would Ludric go them or other fish go them?
Look, guys have caught literally everything on a cranker crab. I lost a cranker crab once in a Gold Coast canal to a giant herring as I was winding it in fast and skipping across the surface. So that morning, if you bet me that you were going to lose a cranker crab to a giant herring, I would have said you were dreaming. But look, I think anything that eats a crab is fair game. If I lived in New South Wales, and I live in Queensland, if I lived in New South Wales, I would spend half of my life throwing the biggest cranker crab you can buy with a big single hook in it around rocks for those big blue grouper and big drummer and stuff that you get down there, because I reckon they would be absolutely awesome in an ocean wash off on a medium roughness day and off those rocky headlands. And I reckon that those big crab-eating blue grouper would be an absolute sucker for them.
Starlo told a beautiful story on the Big Fish a while back about going down to this wharf, and there was an old digger there with a big heavy hand line, and Starlo's there with his finesse gear for Ludric and the weed and the float and the centre pin reel and all the rest of it. And the bloke said, I'm fishing for Ludric too. And Starlo just laughed his guts out and said, look at this idiot. And what the bloke was doing was catching crabs, putting them on the hook, lowering them down to the giant Ludric that were living around the pylon, and hooking them and skull dragging him up out of the depths. He said, "Oh, the biggest blackfish I'd ever seen," and yep. That's the way the bloke was catching him, and he learned a lesson then not to laugh before you have a think about it.
That's right. You can learn off everybody, and again, that's another thing we learned in ABT events. No matter who you fish with, there's something to learn from them. So it's never write them off. The one thing I've learned about fishing is you never know everything, ever.
Oh, it's great that idea of sharing knowledge too. I think, and at the end of the day, the St. Clair event that we spoke about last week and all the rest of it, the thing that people remember is sitting around the fire with a cold sherbet with the mates, enjoying a shared passion, don't you think, Steve?
Oh, definitely. And of course, having those what-if plans. You know, if I had my time again, of course I would have won the tournament because of X, Y, and Z. So it's always the post-game briefing. You're sitting with your mates or you're driving home.
Yeah.
You have all the ideas 24 and 48 hours too late, you know. That's the thing. If our fishermen were just a bit smarter, we'd probably win a lot more tournaments.
It's the technique that got away.
That's it.
Steve Morgan, thanks so much for the masterclass on using realistic crab lures. Not much to it, really. Sorry to say that, but is that fair to say?
No, look, it is. It's the easiest difficult technique in the world.
Great to talk to you, Steve. Thanks for joining us on The Big Fish.
Cheers, Scott.
The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
Butcher's Burley Secrets coming up next on The Big Fish. A lot of people heading north. Get away from the cold, heading towards that fishing town this morning.
I'm on the 437 out of Central, and I'm heading north. I've had this ticket for my destination since the day I was born. I'm on the 437 in a boxcar like a hobo on the run. And if today is the first day of the rest of my life, then let it roll. 'Cause I'm moving up to the fishing town where rubber boots and the flannel shirts are. Stowed away, there ain't no window seat. There's a fella playing solitaire, and he bets against himself and then he cheats. And there's another guy who's got his eye on a piece of pie, but she's just a photograph. It seems that everybody's dreaming the dream of how to get what they need. Central, and I'm heading north. And I've had this ticket for my destination since the day I was born. I'm on the 437 in a boxcar like a hobo on the run. I'm on the 437 out of Central. Slow down. I'm moving up.
Those Novocastrian purveyors of piscatorial tunes, the hillbilly fishermen on the Big Fish. Coming up, Butcher's Secret Burley, Craig Butcher with his dark arts of inshore Sydney snapper fishing. They're on at this time of the year too.
On ABC Radio, it's the Big Fish with Scott Levi.
Craig Butcher, our inshore Sydney expert, joins us. Good morning, Butch.
Good morning, Scotty. How are you, mate?
I'm really well. It's getting a bit late in the day for you. You usually head out at about 2 in the morning, don't you?
Yeah, mate, that's right, mate. Bedtime's about 9 a.m, so I'll be crashing out soon.
Yeah, you've finished your session for today. That low light and snapper, I mean, they are really sensitive to light, aren't they? You've been having some great success on Sydney Reds in the wee small hours of the morning. What are some of the... I guess it's for the experience, though. You've got to be really careful of those bombies that hiss and foam and suck up in the middle of the night. You've got to know where you're going.
Yeah, absolutely, Scotty. Yeah, it's like, you know, if you're going to plan your marks, make sure you do it before you get out there. So for us, we sort of know where we're going to fish. We know that it's a safe spot. We've got the GPS mark locked in. You know, we know the area really well. So for us, it's like, you know, we're going straight to our mark. But for anyone that doesn't know the Wassers, you know, I certainly wouldn't be doing that. You know, 5 a.m. in the morning when it's pitch black and trying to set yourself up, you know, when you've got no idea, it's a very dangerous kind of proposition, isn't it, mate?
It is indeed, yes. Not for the faint-hearted, and even then it can go wrong. You've had a couple of, one launching incident that cost you a boat that I won't, yeah. I shouldn't bring that wound up or open that wound again.
Still pretty raw,
but that's the way it rolls. And of course, if you're worried about that, why not try those techniques in the more sheltered waters around some of the drop-offs in Sydney Harbour? It'd work pretty well there too, wouldn't it?
Absolutely, Scotty. Yeah, it's funny, you know. North Head, even though it doesn't have the same current, people always say, you know, current for snapper. You know, get in that current. That's where the big guys are. But we have actually had a bit of success tucked inside North Head. There is no current. Really early, so get there 5 a.m. saying pump that burley trail, and you can pull good reds. You can pull platies, but you can also pull good reds out of there in those sheltered grounds. So right now, Scotty, I've basically got a little system going where I go to pet stores, I get a 20-kilo bag of chook pellets, so layer pellets, or you know, all that kind of stuff, which is I presume a mixture of blood and bone, protein, and all that kind of stuff. Well, what I do is basically just probably ladle about a kilo per session, and then cover it with tuna oil and just let that sit overnight. Then in the morning, sort of, you know, launch the boat 4 a.m, drive to the mark, you know, probably takes us half an hour sometimes to get up the longy, but, you know, drive to the mark, find your spot, you know, spot lock with the anchor, and then just ladle bit by bit of that tuna oil chook pellets out, and it's a dynamite little burley trail, you know. Like, pillies are fantastic, you know, pillies are probably, you know, my preferred, but just to make it easier and also economical, the layer pellets work fantastic. And we've, you know, we've got some big, big reds, you know, big sort of, you know, 6 kilo reds behind the boat just on those layer pellets and tuna oil.
It's a quite different style of fishing too, isn't it? It's far more sporting than a big sash weight, you know, 16-ounce lead on the bottom, yeah, or whatever. Tell us about the gear.
Yeah, the old plumb bob, you know, it's, as you've said, it's not the greatest of sport, but this light line stuff, you know, 12 pound braid, you know, 20 mono, probably max, even 15 pound mono. You know, sometimes you can get lucky with the big red, right? It'll just scream out and it won't collect anything along the way. No bit of reef, but sometimes you're not lucky. But in most cases, you'll stop a pretty good red on that 15 pound gear.
And the squid have been excellent as the season sort of closes with them, as they start to die after breeding. Squid, preferred bait, fresh squid.
Fresh squid, absolutely, Scotty. The other one is pike. So like on anchor at night, you'll find a lot of pike off those northern beaches reefs, mate. They're in plague proportion, actually. And so while you're sort of there on dark getting that burley trail for the reds, you'll often pick up a nice couple of pike. And those pike fillets are deadly. They're a very smelly kind of bait. The snapper, I don't know if it's their staple diet, but they're really, they can really hone in on those pike. And
pike are one of the few fish that are stinky before you kind of fill it off. They've got a funny aroma, the old stinky pike.
That's right. And the old saber-tooth whiting, we call them.
Saber-tooth whiting. And look, I do have a look at your social media. You've been catching some lovely snapper and cooking them up in all sorts of delightful ways. You're a bit of a gourmet. You don't waste them. What are some of the techniques you've been using in the kitchen of late?
it's a good one, Scotty. Well, look, mate, to be completely honest, I'm the old crummet. Get it in the deep fryer and serve it. But my wife, she's like, Craig, you know what? You're getting a little bit around the middle section. So let's look at different ways to cook fish a bit healthier. So recently, we've been doing one is the steamer, so putting fresh fillets through the steamer, and two is to cook it whole in the Weber, so covered in your foil. When she's not looking, I do inject a couple of cloves of butter, basically a whole knob of butter in there, and some olive oil and the rest, mate. But snapper are just one of those fish. I've kind of stopped fishing for kingies because, you know, they're a good sushi, but I don't rate them quite as much cooked as I would a snapper. So recently I've just really been focusing on the reds.
You know you're starting to sound like, don't you?
Who's that? Stinker?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, mate.
You're turning into Stinker.
Oh, he's a long lost father, is he?
You are turning into Stinker. He's given up on everything. He just likes those snapper. He said they're just the best. They look great. They fight great. They perform really well in the kitchen. So,
you know, it's for a famous Stinker quote when he was snagged on the bottom. You can't pull up Australia. He is a living legend from our part, mate, the old Stinker. So if you put me in that same frame, I'm pretty pumped.
That's great. And look, it's wonderful that you love your fishing and there's still good snapper resources. And, you know, I think there's so many small squire and snapper, breeding up in Sydney Harbour now. Thanks for sharing your secrets. I mean, really, really very, very nice of you to do that.
My pleasure, Scott. It's always great to talk to you, mate. And, you know, in terms of the Sydney Harbour and the way Sydney Harbour's fishing, it just goes to show, you know, you remove the netting, you remove the traps, even though there's offshore traps, which they're sort of cutting back on. You know, the things like snapper, gillies, you know, big kings can really flourish in those environments. And I think it's a fantastic thing. You know, we're heading in a really new, uncharted, great direction for fishing. So it's a good time to be fishing.
Good stuff. Craig Butcher, catch you next time on The Big Fish.
Thank you very much, Scotty.
The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
There's plenty of fish in the ocean. There's plenty of fish in the ocean. There's plenty of fish in the deep blue sea. And I know there must be one for me.
For me. There's plenty of fish in the ocean. There's plenty of fish in the ocean. There's plenty of fish in the deep blue sea. And I know there must be one for me. For me. If I find out you're swimming about in somebody else's pond, then blow me down, I'll be on the town with the yo-ho-ho and a beautiful blonde.
With the yo-ho-ho and a beautiful blonde.
There's plenty of fish in the ocean. There's plenty of fish in the ocean. There's plenty of fish in the deep blue sea, and I know there must be one for me. For me. There's plenty of fish in the ocean. There's plenty of fish in the ocean. There's plenty of fish in the deep blue sea, and I know there must be one for me. For me.
Speaking of Butcher's secret Burley mix, there's big Burley Ives, and there's plenty of fish in the ocean. Even more in Sydney Harbour. We'll go for our walking tour of Sydney Harbour with the wonderful Alex Bellissimo, the beach, rock and estuary shore guide. He doesn't have a boat, just fishes off the bank, and we're going to a place called Fairlight Beach. We're working our way around some of the great land-based spots in Sydney Harbour, particularly accessible for those people who don't have a boat and maybe people who have some mobility issues as well. That's all coming up.
Bloody seagulls.
This is The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
Here
come Stinker with his fishing tips. Some hot advice for your fishing trip. Where to find him? What's the bait?
Are you catching any, mate?
Good morning, Stinker.
Hey, g'day, Scott.
Stinker, a lot of people love walking through art galleries and looking at the sculpture and the paintings, but I think for a lot of fisher folks, their art is in the tackle shop. Boy, there are some lures in there at the moment that are just astounding. Have you seen those realistic crab lures?
Oh, I wandered through a tackle store here a couple of weeks ago, and I was astounded. The place was full of mice and frogs and crabs and things, and I feared and thought I was at the zoo. It was, and they are so realistic. I mean, I've never seen. They must have been. I mean, it's a fair bit. It's a work of art. Those things.
It is. You were saying to me that you saw one of those crab lures crawl off the shelf.
Yeah, and a frog hopped, and the rat shot underneath the counter, and they're all lures. Quite incredible.
It is. Is amazing.
Come a long way, Scott. The tackle industry. Well, I was brought up in a. My father worked, I suppose you could say, the tackle industry, because really they're in Tweed Heads in the early to mid 60s. There were only two shops that sold tackle. Supermarkets never sold tackle. Actually, I can't remember supermarkets anyway. But, they never sold tackle. There was only two places that did. And one was a fish shop out at the mouth of the river. And the other one was where my dad worked, a Tweed Heads sports store. And in that sports store, you could buy guns and bullets and cigarettes and toys and cricket bats, tennis rackets, look, and fishing rods. Oh, the amount of fishing rods they sold. And the fishing gear, well, the fishing gear was very limited. You just have an array of hooks and a few sinkers and a few swivels, and that was it. Or maybe a couple of spinners, you know, to catch tailor. But really, nothing else. Absolutely nothing else.
Were people more self-reliant in those days? I mean, I remember my dear old grandfather, Dar, he'd have sheets of lead off of some roof that he'd worked on. He was a bit of an amateur carpenter. I hope he didn't knock it off. I don't think he did knock it off. And he'd melt that and make all his sinkers. Even sometimes we just cut a bit of it off with the tin snips and he'd just fold it around the line.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't even worry about melting it into a sinker shape. Were there people who really didn't need tackle shops as much in those days?
Well, of course, you always need to buy hooks. But, lead. I mean, people would use, if you're going into deeper water, you could use a spark plug, an old spark plug. Anything will get you down. Like, I mean, it doesn't have to be lead and it doesn't have to be a special shape. All it has to be is heavy. and then, of course, fishing line. I can only really remember maybe one or two brands of fishing line that you would buy. And you'd have one rod, one reel. The fishing line would cater for whether you were fishing for tailor off the beach or flathead or whiting. It was the same line, same reel, same rod. You know, now you'll see in certain garages, you might see 8-10 fishing rods. Well, we had one.
You can only really, unless you're setting a few rods in the boat, but if you're fishing off the beach or the rocks, you can only fish with one at a time, although the beach rod holders are pretty useful, but two max. I think you're only allowed two anyway, aren't you?
Oh, look, I don't know, but it was such an interesting game. This shop, it was called Tweed Heads Sports Store was what it was, and the old-timers around the Tweed area would know it very well. It had the red and white spiral pole out in the front because it was a barber shop in there, and this is what the old shops of the of that particular time. They had the barber shop in the back, and you could buy guns and bullets, and you could get a haircut. You could go and have a bet at the SP bookie.
You could have a bet.
And yeah, in the back room, no one talked about it. But you'd have to. There was a little door, and you'd go out the door, and you know, into the dark. Well, I wasn't allowed to go out there, but I knew what was going on. And you could buy toys, you know, and bait. Well, bait, gee, really, all you could buy were live sea worms and salted white pilchards. Now, really, that's about all you could buy. Or frozen garfish when the tailor were on the move. But your choice, there's no choice. There was really no choice. There was no fiberglass rods. No, none. Absolutely none. Vortex was the first fiberglass rod I ever saw. I think it came in from America. But no one was going to use one because it was called glass, when obviously glass is going to shatter the first time you catch a fish. You know, no one would think that you could use glass to catch fish. So really, the whole industry has evolved into a monstrous fishing tackle industry that never really existed, certainly when I was growing up.
What about lures, John? Were there ever any lures on the shelf or on the wall?
No. There would be a few what we used to call spinners, which were cast and retrieved very quickly for tailor, because up there they love their tail. They still do. But there were no lures, you know, soft bodies and, you know, hard body lures. No, nothing. You just basically everybody used a side cast reel. I never saw an egg beater, what we call egg beater reel, until I was in my mid-20s. I never saw one. And when I first saw one, I thought, what on earth is that thing? You know, because Queensland, Albie reel was a Queensland reel, of course, and everybody in Queensland, if you see any of those old photographs, they've all got that old side cast reel. And, well, that come down into Tweed Heads and into the north coast of New South Wales as well. And so reels, well, there's no choice of reels. You either had an Alvey reel or you didn't have a reel. Oh, look, and really it has, as I said before, and you can wander through a tackle shop now and have a look at such an array of material that never even existed before.
Thank goodness your old man had tennis rackets and cricket balls.
Yep.
And cricket bats, or it would have had nothing to fill the shop.
Well, yeah, that's true. The cricket bats and cigarettes, a big wall of tobacco. I mean, they could sell just about anything in there. Then they had a laundry section. I mean, it was a wonderful old shop. If anyone, I'm sure there are listeners, old pioneers up at Tweed can remember it. It was in between the two pubs, because there's so much change has happened up on the Tweed too, that shops like that just don't exist anymore. But it was a real hub of activity. And I do remember my old mate, and I mentioned him last week, Wormy Jack. Well, Wormy Jack fronts up one day, and he had a push bike. He had a dog at one end of the push bike and a basket on the other end of the push bike. And in the basket, he had about six or eight mud crabs, which they'd been cooked. Oh, well, he cooked them. I don't quite know. Anyway, they were red.
Bit dodgy.
dodgy red. That's what they were. And he had a stick of chalk. And I was working in the tackle shop in the sports store at the time. And he got off the bike and he swore, oh, this bloke could swear like nothing on earth. I'd never heard anything like it before. And he'd never smile. He was never, ever happy. Anyway, he drew this square on the ground on the footpath in front of the tackle shop, and he's got these old crabs. One had one claw, one had no claws, and then he'd have a claw. Oh, look, it was a mess. Anyway, he put the crabs on the ground and he drew with the chalk the price of the crab on its back. Oh, it might be $2 or $3 or whatever it was. And then he wrote another sign on the footpath: do not touch the crabs. Don't touch the crabs. Whatever you do, don't touch the crabs. And anyway, I saw this lady wandering around, and I could see she was interested in these crabs. And she was quite a sophisticated-looking lady. She'd probably come from Victoria. And she had one of those sort of beehive hairdos and, you know, high-heel shoes and all that sort of stuff. And I'm thinking, oh, dear, here we go. And she looked and she bent down and I could see a finger going to poke one. And I thought, oh, no, please don't poke it. Anyway, she said she poked it all right. But thankfully, Wormy was facing the other direction. But then the whole thing took a bad turn because she picked it up. She picked the crab up. Oh, heavens above. And then he turned around and he spotted her with the crab in her hand. Well, I've never heard anything like it. And I'll give you the short version. He basically said, she said, what are you doing? And she said, I'm checking it if it's empty. And to which he replied, the only thing that's empty is your head. And I'm thinking, this is not good for business. This is not good for business. And a few other expletives. Well, the poor lady was absolutely shell-shocked by this attack from Wormy Jack. So the crab was dropped on the ground, and oh, dear, and she staggered off, never to return to the Tweed, I should think. but as far as a teenager watching through the window, I mean, this was just prize entertainment, really.
Oh, Wormy Jack.
Wormy Jack.
They were dodgy crabs. They were dodgy.
I can tell you a million stories about Wormy Jack. He was a real, real character. You know, they don't exist anymore, Scott. Where's all the characters gone? Where are they?
I don't know. Thank God you're still with us, Stinker. That's all I can say.
Oh, gee, I'm not as rough as Wormy. I can tell you that much.
That's debatable. Hey, yeah. Tight lines, mate.
All right. See you later, Scott. Hooroo.
The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
There are a few characters about. Dick Streak's still about down there on the south coast around Bega. You'll catch him at a watering hole or a river somewhere every now and then if you're lucky. And he tells the tale of camping with Kev. Kev was a bit of a know-all, but he got his comeuppance.
Now, I had a mate called Kevin. We both worked in the trade. And Kev knew every timber that got it ever made. He wore an older Cubra with a Kelpie by his side, and he wanted to go fishing on the snowy riverside. So he headed off that Friday with his missus and a mate. By the time we found a campsite, it was getting pretty late. I started getting firewood, but Kev was not impressed. He said, that timber could be habitat. You've just destroyed a nest. Leave the fire to an expert. Just watch everything I do, because the bush is very special and you haven't got a clue. I started getting furious and Kev said, come with me. We'll go down to the riverbank and catch ourselves some tea. We set our bait and cast our rods. We let the lines run out. If we come back just on sunset, we should have some river trout. So off we went together back down to the river shore, his missus and her best friend, and Kev, the crashing bull. I grabbed my line and reeled it in, with nothing there to see. Then Kev said, come in, spinner, leave the catching up to me. He grabbed his line and reeled it in, and much to our disgust, old Kev had caught and killed himself a native platypus. We all just stood there speechless as the fire petered out. Then Kev said in frustration that it should have been a trout. We dined on tinned spaghetti in the Kosciuszko rain. I won't forget that weekend, and I won't be back again.
I think Big Head Kev has broken every rule in angling and wildlife conservation. Yes, that was the bad old days.
This is The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
Coming up, our walking tour of Sydney Harbour continues with rod in hand. Just like Huck Finn, it's good to see the kids with the rod over their shoulder heading down to their local jetty or rock fishing spot inside the harbour, of course, not off the ocean rocks. And it's nice there's still plenty of access for those people who just want to wet a line.
Somewhere in the deep blue sea, right down deep at the bottom of the ocean, is a boy who's just waiting for a little money kingdom. And when he sees me in my wetsuit and my real cute flippers, he's gonna know that I'm the girl for him. Cause somewhere my big fish Roger.
The wonderful Monica Trafficker and the Moochers, Big Fish Joe on The Big Fish with Scott Levi. Great to have your company. We continue our walking tour of Sydney Harbour, some of the great land-based options for fisher folk around Australia's best city. Big Fish Joe. Our walking fishing tour of Sydney Harbour ticks all the boxes, really. Yeah, we're getting fit, we're being sustainable, we're protecting the habitat by making sure that there's good sea life in that area, and only taking a few for a feed, if any. Many fishermen are all catch and release these days, of course, not leaving litter. And a lot of these spots, Alex Bellissimo, our fishing guide in Sydney Harbour, a land-based fishing guide, they're accessible for people with mobility issues too.
Good morning, Scotty. No, that's exactly right. So starting at the west of Fairlight Beach, so we actually got up to Fairlight Swimming Pool. And as I mentioned, off Fairlight Swimming Pool, it's one of those cheeky spots that you can go and fish for a moudrick off there. And that's what we touched base on last time, I think. And then off the beach there at Fairlight Beach, you can catch your whiting and brim and some flathead. And, you know, you can have your kids running around and you can have a bit of a cheeky fish there as well. You can actually jump in there with some goggles and snorkel and, you know, check out the sea life. And also additionally have a fish. You know something, when I was a kid, right, I used to go to Fairlight and jump in with my goggles and snorkel and flippers and go, oh, look at those brim and whiting there. And I'd just jump back out there and I know exactly where they were and I'd go and have a few casts in that specific area, you know. So, I mean, I don't do that quite so much anymore, but because generally, you know, when I'm probing out a new spot, I do it by sight and by ocean topography, what the actual the different colours of water, which means that there's different water depths and a different colour of water, which means that there's more weed or rock, or if it's light, it's that light white rock or that sandstone. If it's darker, there's a bit of weed. If the water's more greener or bluer, depending on the time of the year, obviously it means it's deeper or more shallower. And then I can determine what's actually going on and where I'm actually fishing, and also determine when to fish and where to fish depending on the stage of the tide. So I don't so much jump in the water when I did when I was a 13-year-old at Fairlight, 14-year-old, when I'd jump in the water and go, wow, look at those whiting, look at those brim.
What about lure fishing there? Is it a spot where people, you know, could catch something a bit bigger, a tarler or a kingfish or something?
Absolutely. See, the rock's actually west of the pool. You get kings that come in there in summertime. You get a salmon and tarler. You can fish the tarler there in the evenings. You can fish with a small float, a fixed float if you like, or even a running float. Only fish about a metre under the water because you find that the tarler in the evenings tend to be fairly close to the surface generally, sort of a metre, maybe 2 metres under the water. Have your float, have your gang pilchard. You can just cast it out with a glow light in your actual float, or the float slides up to a fixed glow light, like you've got the actual rubber tube, you've got your glow light, and the float slides up to that, and you can just fish for tarler, fishing that way. And you fish for tarler and salmon, you get very occasionally you will get the odd jewfish as well, so you can actually set it a lot deeper. But there is some jewfish caught in North Harbour. There's some anglers that are pretty switched on, and they tend to get a few jewfish in North Harbour, you know, because they're targeting them. But they're generally more so, you know, the kayakers and the boat anglers.
Yeah.
If you fish off the rocks there, you get brim, you get ludric off there, you get trevally. Now, if you are fishing with pilchard mush, topped up pilchard, and you mush it in with wet white bread, you know, in say like a 10 or 15 litre bucket, that's all you need. You consistently burly, so you don't liberally burly. Burly up every, say, half minute or 2 minutes. Make sure it's consistent. Fish with unweighted pilchard tails or heads, peeled hawksbury prawns, pilchard fillets, pink nippers if you can get them, and, say, a 1-0 hook, 3-kilo line, 3 to 4-kilo line, a nice whippy, I mean, your ludric rod, for example, or your beach whiting rod, with your 500 Alvey or your 3,000 egg beater, say, for example, and 3 or 4 kilo braid, make wonderful fishing. You get a broad range of species. It's good to have a heavier outfit there in case some kings show up. It's always good to have a rod ready.
Rod Reddy used to play lock for St George.
Rod Reddy. It's going way back, isn't it? Rod Reddy.
Yeah, so have something loaded with something a bit bigger in case the kingies move in or something like that.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned Rod Reddy. It's an old
what a player he was. Where are we going next time?
Okay, so we're going west of the rocks there. So look, we only mentioned a very, very small portion then. So we're going to go further west, and we're heading into the back of North Harbour. There's a big sandbank, but we're still a fair way away from there. Okay, and mate, it's just great fishing. There's a marina on the other side, so there's plenty of structure, great fishing. There's plenty of species there.
Sounds exciting. Fishing on Shank's Pony, it's the way to go. You get fit, you get a feed, you get omega-3s, and you get out in the beautiful fresh air around beautiful Sydney Harbour. Tight lines, Alec Bellissimo. We'll catch you next time.
All right, Scott. It's been a pleasure.
Okay. You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.